Hi, I'm Richard Lefley. I'm the EVP for Micro Insurance Company. I'm based here in the UK, and it's great to be talking with the InsurTech Business Series podcast. And I'm really looking forward to sharing my experience of bringing insurance to millions of people in Africa and Asia.
Welcome to the InsurTech Business Series podcast. I am Fulumi.
And I am Damola. And together, we host the most exciting podcast on insurance and InsurTech related topics in Africa. Stay tuned. Hello and welcome to another interesting episode of InsurTech Business Series. And today we have an amazing guy in the house. He's been in and around the insurance industry on the African continent for a while, for a number of years, a very long number of years, specifically in the micro insurance space. And we're super excited to be speaking with him, especially around, you know, the fact that, following the pandemic, right, there's a lot of conversation around building insurance products for the uninsured and looking at the insurance space on the African continent, how underpenetrated it is. So we're having Richard in the house. Richard, how are you?
I'm well. Thank you for having me. Yeah, it's always funny when people introduce me because they obviously take one look at my gray hair and work out that, can they say that I'm an old guy, you know, like that I've been around for a while? So I'm fine with it. You know, don't worry. It's cool. 20 years, nearly 20 years of playing this game. So, yeah.
Wow, 20 years. That's a long time. And I mean, how has that been? How has going into that space been for you? I mean, looking back now.
Well, I guess the real question is, would I do it again, right? So if I had a time machine, would I go back and choose to do it again? And the honest answer is probably not, right? So I think it's incredibly hard, right? Selling insurance is hard. No one wakes up wanting to buy insurance. Everyone can understand the need for a loan or a savings account. Everyone wants to receive remittances from overseas. Mm. So insurance is the kind of ugly duckling of the financial services world, isn't it? And selling insurance to the mass market, you know, to the 97% of people in Africa who don't have insurance, that's tough. Right. That's really tough. So it's been tough and it's been a very difficult journey. I learned a lot, made a lot of mistakes along the road. I'm glad I've done it. I mean, it's been definitely been rewarding. So I don't regret doing it. But I think the fine line between success and failure is incredibly narrow. And so I've been grateful to make it this far, and with a bit of luck and maybe there's some support from a lot of different companies. It's been an interesting journey, but I probably wouldn't set out on the journey again.
Yeah, you wouldn't, but I mean, definitely it's been fulfilling for you. Looking at what you've been able to achieve, and even how the company has grown to what it is today. Yes, we'll go into that later. Now, but before we go there, you've told us a bit about, I mean, what your experience has been in the past year, but in past 20 years, right? Looking at the more recent times, right? COVID has happened. A lot of things has happened. How is Richard in the face of all of these things?
I mean, obviously, COVID's tragic. I mean, I sometimes feel guilty because I live in the UK. I live in a kind of quite a rural area. I live in a town of about 150,000 people. And frankly, life hasn't really changed here. So, you know, we hear these stories about COVID and obviously read the newspaper. But it hasn't really washed up on our shore here in rural England. So I feel really guilty knowing that many of my colleagues around the world have kind of faced a much harder time. I do think, though, it's focused minds, isn't it? I mean, it's focused minds around this idea of insurance and what's it about, right? So, you know, and I think it's really shone a light on those kind of companies that really don't want to pay claims. Versus those that understand that when a pandemic happens, that's exactly when you're supposed to step up and help people, right? And so I sorted out the the men from the boys, you know, in the insurance world. And I think, you know, people have shown their true colors. You know, those there are insurance companies who don't want to pay claims. You don't want to be involved in helping people in their time of need. And I think it's weeded out those companies. And I think the general public now know who they are.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, speaking about claims, it definitely is one of the major issues, not only in the on the African continent, but around the world, right? But how did, I mean, starting off, how did Micro Insure approach this whole issue around claims, especially serving the African continent?
Well, I think, I hope we've been radical. I mean, I always found it hilarious, well, slightly worrying that an industry, you know, there's an industry, the insurance industry, and they call, you know, they call these claims losses, which tells quite a lot, doesn't it? Right. I mean, imagine if when Coca-Cola sold a bottle of Coke, they referred to that as a loss. You know, that the whole purpose is that you buy something you can drink. So the whole purpose of insurance is that when something bad happens, you're supposed to get some money. And the industry calls that a loss. Right? Don't, I mean, that kind of says quite a lot, right? It's like, why don't we call it like service delivery or execution of contract? Or I don't know, like there's so many different things, but like the whole mentality is one of like, how do I avoid not standing by the contract, not paying up? How do I find a way out of this, right? Because it's a loss. So, you know, right from the outset, Microinsure, I mean, we set Microinsure up. And of course, Microinsure is now the microinsurance company. So, you know, when we started working in this space, the idea was to say, look, insurance companies have been around for decades. 97% of the population don't have insurance. So clearly something's wrong. Something is broken. So let us work out what is broken and then let us find a solution to that problem and try and fix it. And if we can then find a solution, and I believe, you know, a lot of that was around things like, okay, how do we come up with really, really simple products that can be explained in a in a single text message? How do we remove friction from the customer journey? So how do we make it super easy to sign up? How do we make it super easy to pay? How do we make it super easy to make a claim? And then the final piece, of course, is, as I said, is getting the claims paid quickly. So, you know, when we started working in a country like Kenya, for example, you know, I remember meeting with the insurance companies and them saying, you know, and boasting to us and telling us how quickly they were paying claims. And when we looked into it, we realized that they were taking 90 days from the time they learned about the claim to the time they paid. And in their opinion, that was super quick. That was like, you know, incredibly fast. And when we turned around and said, no, we need to pay that in like less than 5 days, preferably 1 or 2 days, it was just shock. You know, it was like, how would we ever do that as an insurance industry? So we've had to kind of shake things up a lot to try and get people kind of to understand what we're trying to do.
That's quite interesting. Can you take us back to, I mean, how did this whole thing, I mean, we've said 20 years now, but how did it all start for you coming to that space?
Yeah, so I was 29. I was fairly idealistic. I was working in London as a reinsurance broker, and I became fascinated by that. There was this kind of report that Swiss Re produced called the Sigma Report. It came out like once a year, and it had in it like all the statistics around kind of penetration of insurance. So how many people had insurance in this country, you know, etc. And there was one table in that report which I remember very well, and it kind of basically said it was this table. Like, and on one side of the table, it said, what were the most costly natural disasters in dollars? And so this was always in, you know, in the US, in Europe, in Japan, you know. And then on the other side of the table, it was like the most costly natural disasters in terms of human life, right? And this side of the table was dominated by like Bangladesh and India and, you know, and countries in Africa, right? And so there was a kind of mismatch between kind of cost, you know, measure of cost in dollars versus in human life. And there was this mismatch between the kind of Western world and emerging countries, right? And so that kind of like flagged to me as a young guy, hey, you know, there's this huge mismatch between where the risk is and where the insurance is. And so I decided I wanted to find out more. So I went down, I took a 2-week vacation. I took one of these kind of, you know, NGO type, you know, voluntary service things. I went down to Zambia to do some voluntary work in a village. But really, you know, my real aim was to go and find out what was going on. Why weren't people buying insurance? And, you know, over the course of the 2 weeks, I had a lot of conversations with people in that village in northern Zambia. And one of the conversations was really kind of a turning point, and it led to the creation of Microinsure and of course today the microinsurance company, which was this lady explaining to me that her life was a lot like this game of chutes and ladders, or snakes and ladders, as we call it in the UK, where she was just trying to work her way out of poverty. But, you know, from time to time, something bad would happen and she would slide her way back to the bottom of the board. And so her challenge to me was not how do you stop bad things happening, but how do you stop me sliding back down to the bottom of the pile, right? And so that's what we've been trying to do. You know, as a microinsurance company, we're interested in putting in this kind of safety net that moves up underneath people, so that as they work their way up, when bad things do happen, they don't have so far to fall.
Okay, yeah, that's quite interesting, and it brings me to something that I know that you've spoken about even during our conference, the ABS conference last November, speaking about the challenge of insurance on the African continent not being a product problem but a distribution problem, right? And I want to ask, like, looking at this kind of situation now, because the whole history of insurance maybe on the African continent is you are seeing a situation where, I mean, what is being done or used in the West, it was just kind of like imported. So it's not kind of like close to the African reality, right? So it means that things have to be different, even the product. But your argument is that it's a distribution challenge. I mean, maybe you can share more light on that.
Yeah, the point I was trying to get across is that, I mean, I've been to many, many meetings with mobile phone companies, banks, you know, ride hailing companies. And if you go to those meetings with an insurance company, typically, I mean, you know, the way the meeting goes is that, you know, they put up the slides, and the slides are like, you know, this is us. We're a fantastic insurance company. You know, these are all the people that we work with, you know, and they're kind of like, you know, talking about themselves. And then they finally get to a position where they kind of put up their products. And so they just list out their products. And then insurance becomes very, very commoditized, right? And so then it just becomes a conversation around, okay, so how do I get cheaper insurance? So if I'm the telco, if I'm the mobile phone company, I just look at that, and all I remember is that this insurance company has these products and these prices. And so then it just becomes a case of, okay, how do I go and find a cheaper price or whatever? And so the approach that we've taken is quite different in that, no one really wakes up wanting to buy insurance. So why are we talking about products? So what we need to work out, instead of starting with the product and then working out how it's going to get sold, we need to do it the other way around, right? And so we need to work out, okay, so if we're going to sell it through this mobile phone company or this bank or this ride hailing company, then we need to start from the viewpoint of, how are the customers already engaging with this organization? And what are the challenges that this organization are facing? So if it's a mobile phone company, maybe they've got declining revenue. Maybe they've got problems, you know, with getting people to actually make transactions on the mobile wallet, right? So across Africa, mobile wallets are being rolled out. But how many people are actually using them? You know, how many people are actually keeping any money on the wallet at the end of every day? Not many, right? Like, most people just, you know, put money on the wallet to send to someone. But as soon as that transaction's done, they close the wallet. They never look at it again, right? So, you know, and that doesn't make any money for the mobile phone company. So, you know, what are the problems that the mobile, you know, so when I approach those meetings, it's through the lens of, what is the problem that this business is facing, and how can I use insurance to help address that? And so what we found is that there are these kind of four basic models of distribution that seem to work in the mass market. You know, and I could talk about those if you think that's interesting.
Yeah, absolutely, please.
Okay, so what we've seen is that there are these kind of four different models. So and they work with all these different digital kind of companies like telcos and mobile wallets and banks and the like. So the first model, and by the way, you can use these as part of a strategy. So you could start with one model and graduate over time to a different model. But the first model is that insurance can be used in terms of trying to change customer behavior. Okay, so typically this is where insurance is given away for free in return for the customer doing something. So download the app, you know, make a certain number of transactions, maintain a balance in the account. You know, so the business like works out what it is that it wants the customer to do, and then it works out whether insurance is a good way of motivating people to do that activity. So you could compare it like, you know, do I want to give away McDonald's vouchers or free Netflix or free insurance, right? So it's a promotional activity that's done in order to change customer behavior. So that's the first model. The second model is one where insurance can be bundled, hard bundled, along with other services. So typically this is where, for example, you might bundle together data, Netflix, and insurance, and there might be certain segments of society who want to buy that bundle. Or you might do data, you know, access to games online, and say cyber insurance. You know, so typically the bundle has to make sense to the segment that you're targeting it. But the benefit of this approach is that people that buy the bundle get something that they can play with today or use today, as well as the sleep easy that comes with knowing that you've got insurance for something that might happen in the future. So that's the second model. The third model is you know, models where insurance can be kind of sold as a standalone product. And this model, the biggest mistake that people make on this model is just putting insurance on the shelf, either physically or digitally. But no one wakes up wanting to buy insurance, and no one's going to come and just buy insurance from an app or from a website. Just doesn't work like that, right? So what you have to do is the digital brand, like the telco or the mobile money company, needs to take ownership of the product, and they need to try and position the insurance alongside another activity. So, for example, if a mobile wallet, you know, is being used by people to pay school fees, then you might send a text message or a pop-up to the people saying, hey, do you want your kid to finish school if something bad happens to you? So in that model, we're not selling insurance. What we're doing is we're using the data of, you know, what activity people are involved with to then try and convince them that insurance would be a good thing to take alongside that activity. And then the fourth model is one where it's really all around this kind of gig worker, you know, so we're seeing a lot more people involved in kind of delivering food, driving for ride hailing companies. You know, there's a huge explosion in the kind of gig economy, and insurance can be very powerful in motivating, retaining, mobilizing that kind of gig workforce. And so those are the four models: embedded for free, hard bundled, standalone for sale, and the kind of gig worker economy. And so we tend to, whenever we're approaching a telco or a, you know, new company, we try and think about it through that lens of which of those four models is going to work best for this company, and what is the problem that we can fix using one of those distribution models. And then what you find is that the product kind of almost automatically happens, right? So, you know, once you've decided which of those four models that you're going to use, that almost dictates the features of the product, because it will tell you how much the product can cost. You know, there's no point in coming up with a product which is too expensive if you're trying to charge people using their airtime balance, because if you have a product which is too expensive, they won't have enough airtime to pay for the product. So once you've decided on one of those four models, it kind of helps you kind of set the parameters of what product would work through that channel.
I like the fact that you mentioned this four beautiful model, and should I say that I've been privy to have benefited from one of your flagship products in Nigeria. Unfortunately, I mean, it met, you know, an undeserving end. But I would like to talk about that. We know that we've mentioned distribution issues as it relates to, you know, embedding certain insurance products to certain services. And I know that there was the Airtel Insurance, I can't remember, I think as far back as 2015 or 16. Yes, I was part of the company, Cornerstone Insurance, that was responsible for paying the claims. Yeah. So how do you think, or what do you think were the lessons learned from that, being the fact that it was a viable product?
Do you know that the IBS Women in Insurance webinar is coming up this month of May? The webinar will focus on the challenges, opportunities, and realities faced by women in the insurance industry. Notable speakers like Rasheedat Adebisi, Majori Igwenya, Adeolu Adewumi Zer, and many more will be there. More details on our social media pages. Don't miss it.
But, of course, it was at a point in time, met its untimely, you know.
Hi, my name is Joel Masharia. I'm the co-founder of Motisure, where we provide last mile distribution of microinsurance products. Keep listening to the InsurTech Business Series to get the latest on insurance and InsurTech within and outside of Africa.
Yeah, in some ways it was a failure, right? In some ways it was a success. So the model that you're talking about here is one where, you know, we were working with Airtel across Africa. So we launched insurance in eight countries. One of those countries was in Nigeria. And each of the countries had its own challenges. It was great to work with Cornerstone as part of this product. And certainly, you know, it was a great partnership. And, Cornerstone was a great insurance company to work with in Nigeria. Actually, it was certainly a huge benefit to work with you guys. And I think what was interesting was that we did have success on one level. We launched insurance. So, you know, back to those kind of four models, the idea was that we were going to launch insurance for free. So Airtel subscribers would get free insurance if they topped up more, because one of the issues that Airtel had was that they wanted their subscribers to top up more with Airtel rather than with MTN or with other people. And they also wanted people to be encouraged to stay with Airtel for longer, right? And so we launched that product, and the idea of the product was the more you topped up, the more free insurance you got. And also the only way to keep the insurance was to continue to be an active user of your Airtel SIM card. And so we were measured against those two kind of KPIs, right? So one KPI was, do people top up more? And the other one was, is there a reduction in churn? So do people stay with Airtel longer? And on both those metrics, that product was a success. And we signed up about 1.5 million people. And so in many ways, it was a successful product. But the idea was that we would then graduate from that first model of distributing insurance as a free insurance in return for a change in customer behavior. The idea was that we would then go to a paid for insurance, and that having had the free insurance, we would then sell insurance to people, and we would turn around to them and say, okay, so now you've had this free insurance, would you like to include a family member, or would you like to increase the amount of coverage that you have? But the challenge in the case of Nigeria was that Airtel at that time didn't really have a mobile wallet. So mobile wallets back at that point weren't really ubiquitous. I think MTN had quite an active mobile wallet, but Airtel really didn't. You know, mobile money was really nascent in Nigeria. And so if we were going to make that transition from the free insurance to the paid for insurance, we needed a way of collecting the premium. And the mobile wallet wasn't really a viable platform, because not enough people had the mobile wallet and not enough people stored any money in the wallet overnight. So if you tried to collect money from the mobile wallet, there wouldn't be any money in the wallet for you to collect. So what we wanted to do was to collect money from the airtime balance, like similar to the ringtone model, right? So we wanted to be able to collect, you know, very small increments. So if the product costs $1, then we should collect a few pennies every day from someone's airtime balance. And this is very common with ringtones, with sports scores, with horoscopes, with lots of different services. And yet, in the case of Nigeria, when we approached the regulator, the insurance regulator, there was a long discussion as to whose job it was to decide whether or not insurance premiums could be collected from airtime top up. And there was a year of discussion between the insurance regulator, the central bank, and the telco regulator as to which person's job it was to make a decision on this, right? So not what the decision should be, but just whose job it was to decide. And after a year, I think both us and Airtel became a little bit frustrated in waiting and just decided that there were better opportunities elsewhere in Africa. And so we gave up waiting. We closed down the operation. We closed down the free product because there was no clear pathway to go from free to paid. So that's what happened. And as far as I know, I think that discussion between the regulators is still ongoing. They still haven't decided whose job it is to decide, let alone what the decision should be.
Yeah.
But you can correct me if I'm wrong. If that decision has been taken, I'd love to hear.
Well, there's a micro insurance window that was opened as of last year. And I actually even wanted to ask if you were aware about that, if you'd be interested in, I mean, judging by the fact that micro insurance is one of the major ways we can distribute insurance products in Nigeria. There's a current report from the National Bureau of Statistics that says that about 82 million Nigerians are currently living below the poverty line. And if we say we have a population strength of over 2 million people and we're just playing between the 0.3% and penetration, then it means that we're probably not getting the distribution right. So as part of that, do you think that you're still looking into the Nigerian space, having had this experience? And what would you say would be your alternative approach to, trying as much as possible to cater to this emerging market?
Yeah, I mean, so Nigeria to me is, I mean, on every count. So, I mean, we regularly look at countries around the world and think which country would we like to be involved with as the microinsurance company. And Nigeria is nearly always, either at the top or very near the top of that list. So I think on just about every other metric, Nigeria is an incredibly interesting country. Insurance penetration is very low. Literacy is higher than in many other countries. GDP is actually much higher than the statistics say. So there's a lot of kind of like people don't declare their income. So people do have money, but they're not necessarily declaring it. So there is money in the system. People, you just look around, right? I mean, drive around Lagos. There's plenty of money in a country like Nigeria. So, there's a lot of things that are going for Nigeria, but the one big problem is this area of distribution, right? And it's interesting because at the moment, a lot of the focus is on how do we set up, microinsurance companies? How do we provide more access to insurance? But actually that isn't the issue. It's not about more insurance companies. It's about fixing distribution, right? So how do we actually reach people in a way which is simple and easy for them to sign up? And at the moment, this issue of how insurance is paid for is not being addressed in Nigeria. So that's the biggest blocker for us. Until there's clarity over how people can pay for insurance, so either mobile wallets need to take off in a big way, which still hasn't really happened in Nigeria compared to many countries, or airtime can be used as a way of paying for insurance. I think there's a lot of issues with how successful these kind of mass market models will be in the short term.
All right. Thank you, honestly, for that particular response. And I've often wondered, I know that you are the pioneer for, digital insurance. For millions of people across Asia and Africa. Have you wondered how this is also going to impact your organization when it comes to this, the AFTA agreement, that's the Africa Continental Free Trade Agreement? Are you looking to expand and play in other spaces as well to see how you can adequately tap from this particular opportunity?
Yeah, so I mean, we are interested in expanding across Africa. We've taken a slightly different path. So last year we transitioned from being microinsure, which was like an insurtech kind of broker, to becoming the microinsurance company. One of the reasons for that was that then we're a kind of digital insurance company that can work globally. We can work in any country. So we can already go into any country in Africa, any country in Asia now with this model. And we're expanding very, very rapidly. So we're opening like a new country every month at the moment. And that's enabling us, you know, to use a lot of what we learned previously. So, you know, a lot of the lessons that we learned around what products people want, what customer journeys work, and the IT that's necessary to underpin those products at scale. And we're able to now work with a range of insurance companies, insurtechs, you know, other organizations directly like telcos. And we're able to rapidly get into these markets and launch. So we're really interested in talking to people that might be listening in who work in insurance companies or work in insurtechs or work in telcos and banks who want a partner, want an insurance company who can provide both the kind of unique product, but also the IT infrastructure that's necessary to make it work. And that's really pulling us into these new markets. So we've kind of we got a little bit bored waiting for the regulations to catch up, and we just have found a model that works kind of almost outside of those regulations.
Oh, I think I like what you did there. Having, because of course regulatory has been one of the major challenges, as relates to, you know, the actual distribution of insurance products. And, you know, having to partner, bundle products and services is just a whole lot of bottleneck. And I like the fact that we're beginning to find solutions around that, because really that's where you have an ecosystem where the regulator actually supports this thing. You're likely to see more growth. For instance, like Kenya, for example, with their accelerator program and some of the, you know, ongoing contributions to insurtech startups in Kenya, we're beginning to see certain growth in that space. What would you say about, I know that you also picked Kenya.
Sorry, on that one, just on that one. You know, we were really, I was really happy to be part of that accelerator program in Kenya to work with a regulator. And it was interesting because there was a whole bunch of insurtechs that came forward. And one of the things that we consistently heard during that accelerator was that, you know, they were really frustrated in not being able to get kind of like great products. So there was, I think there was at least two or three companies there who wanted to do kind of usage-based insurance for motorbike, you know, taxi drivers, right? So they wanted to have a usage-based insurance for the driver, but they also wanted it for the passenger. So the driver was worried about, like, you know, what happens, you know, he only wanted to pay for insurance on days that he was working. And the guy on the back of the bike, you know, was worried about his her handbag getting snatched by a robber or whatever. And so, you know, could we do a usage-based insurance? And in order to do that, you needed a willing underwriter, which we are. So we're now the underwriter. And you needed the technology that would support that, you know, instead of selling insurance for 12 months, you know, how could we take that down to insurance for 12 minutes, right? Or 12 kilometers. So that's what we're doing, is that we're underwriting the products and we're providing the technology in partnership with the insurtechs who want to launch these products. So back to the conversation about distribution, the insurtech is all about the distribution. That's what they're focusing on. Our job is to come along almost as a utility for the market and say, we're a willing underwriter and a willing supplier of the IT services. Here it is. Get on and do it. And in fact, coming out of that accelerator, arguably there were two or three companies coming out of that accelerator who could be seen as competitors. And in my opinion, I'm sitting there saying, look, I'm a utility for the market. So I'm willing to back all three of you. And I don't mind which one of you wins or loses, because quite frankly, I'm just I'm like a utility like MasterCard or Visa or PayPal. I'm just the rails that enable you to run. And whichever one of you has the best ideas will succeed. And I'm going to just back all three of you. So that's kind of some of the things that are coming out of those accelerator programs. That's really exciting to me.
Hello, this is Pat Callahan, the insurance elephant, calling from near Buffalo, New York, about 5,300 miles from Lagos. I enjoy listening to the InsurTech Business Series. Without it, Imolo Loco, because it proves that even though we are thousands of miles different, the insurance business is not that much different. The concepts and topics that are covered on the InsurTech Business Series, they could be handled the same way right here in Western New York State. So listen in. It's a great podcast, great global and local guests, and it just proves it's a small world for insurance.
Wow. Like really, we're really hoping to see something like that here in Nigeria. We're actually working on something that has to do with, you know, some of these accelerator programs for InsurTech startups in Nigeria. We're hoping that actually comes, you know, to reality. But okay, so that brings me to the fact that I'm actually impressed with most of this, because I know that I actually saw your organization as a partner to the accelerator program. So it's actually good to hear these bits. And so bringing that to one of the models you talk about, where it has to do with the gig economy, how exactly do you intend to play in that space?
Yeah. Well, it's really interesting because our first experience with the gig economy has actually been in the US. Which seems strange for a micro insurance company, right? But actually, what we've learned is that kind of if you want to sell insurance in Africa, then you have to have a really simple product, a really frictionless customer journey, and you have to pay claims quickly. And one of the things that we saw in the US was that there was these kind of section of society who actually wanted exactly the same thing. They wanted a really simple product that was really frictionless to engage with and really easy to make a claim for. So what we found in the US was that there were, you know, I mean, lots of scenarios. There was a scenario where you had someone who might have a white collar professional job. They might be an accountant or a banker, but then in the evening they want to teach Pilates or yoga. And in order to do that, they have to book a public space like a gym. And in the US, if you want to book a gym, you have to have professional indemnity insurance in case someone gets injured. But these people, they didn't want a 12-month professional indemnity insurance because it's quite expensive. So what they wanted was professional indemnity insurance for 60 minutes or 90 minutes during the Pilates class, right? And so the same principles applied where, you know, if they made the Pilates class available on a website and people could book the Pilates class, then how do we embed insurance so that when someone makes the booking, they're actually paying a few pennies towards a professional indemnity insurance policy, right? And so simple product, frictionless customer journey, easy to make a claim. And what we discovered was that all the lessons that we'd learned in Africa for dealing with low-income families was actually the same as dealing with these gig workers in the United States. And so we started to ask ourselves a question, which was, okay, coming back to emerging countries, you know, what's going on with gig workers? Okay, so there's a lot of ride, you know, there's ride hailing, you know, boda bodas or whatever you call them in different places, you know, motorbike taxis and usage-based insurance. There's kind of a lot of food delivery that's happening, you know, a lot of e-commerce with people like Jumia delivering packages and what have you. And that introduces a huge kind of opportunity for using insurance in many, many different ways, right? So why don't we insure, like, if the food is late or if the food is wrong, you know, you order a salad and you get a pizza, then the money should be just refunded, right? So, but you shouldn't even have to make a claim. And imagine if you booked, you know, food delivery and it was then late or it was wrong. And if you just got the cost of the food refunded, if it was late or if the food was wrong, but you didn't even have to make a claim. You know, that through the data, you just worked, it just was, the claim was just automatically triggered and paid back to your account. That would be a fantastic kind of experience. Or imagine if, you know, you need to book someone, a plumber or an electrician to come in to fix a tap or to fix a plug socket. And in the process of booking up the electrician, then, you know, if they break something or if they steal something in the process of fixing your tap, they kick over the TV, then it's covered, right? And so, you know, how do we start to deploy these very frictionless customer journeys that we've learned how to do back into Africa, back into Asia, back into these gig working economies? And then, you know, during lockdown, we were working with Careem, which is Uber in the Middle East. And Uber had a big problem, which was that the drivers, you know, during lockdown, there was nothing for them to do. And so they weren't logging in, right? And Uber became terrified that at the end of lockdown, when life returned to normal, there wouldn't be any drivers left. And so trying to relaunch the driver network would be incredibly expensive and time consuming. And so they came to us and we introduced a very basic kind of health insurance. And so if you just logged in as a driver, if you just logged in, you know, regularly during the week, even though there was no work to do, then you got this free health insurance. And it cost Uber like $1 a month for this health insurance. But the cost of retraining those drivers was many, many times more expensive. And so what they worked out was that they could use insurance to retain drivers during the lockdown. And it was a much cheaper option than retraining them after the lockdown. So I think there's so many different models that you can use with gig workers. And we're only just at the tip of the iceberg now.
I wanted to go back to some of the things that you said. I mean, you spoke about being a part of the Bima Lab and Bima Lab initiative being something that was brought up by the regulator in Kenya, right? You have been present in different countries and you are currently present in different countries with your products and your offerings. And each of these countries, even if you look at Africa on its own, they have different regulations, different challenges, right? And I mean, one thing that I still struggle with, you know, people from in the West, you know, they think that Africa is just one country, right? Which is, it's not, right? So there are different challenges, different cultures, different languages, different. What role do you think that the regulator or regulation can play, you know, when we are looking to simplify the products, you know, do something differently in order to ensure that more people, you know, get insurance that they need, actually?
Yeah, so, I mean, I have been at the sharp end of great regulation and terrible regulation, I think. I mean, I think the best examples for me are countries like Ghana, like Kenya, for example. I'm sorry to pick on those two countries, but I do think that they have something in common. And in those countries, the regulator has kind of said, okay, look, my job as the regulator is I'm going to map out what are the edges of the playing field. So almost think of it like I'm going to tell you where is the edge of the football pitch. Okay. And I'm not, as the regulator, I'm not going to tell you exactly how you can play football, right? I'm not going to tell you exactly who can pass to who. And, you know, I'm going to let you work that out, but I'm going to tell you what are the edges. So you can't go outside of the edges, right? So here are the edges of what you're allowed to do. And then I'm going to let you guys innovate and dream up and come up with the crazy ideas. As long as it's within the football pitch, I'm going to leave you alone, right? And I think the mistake that some regulators try and make is that they try and kind of like, you know, tell exactly, okay, this guy should wear this color t-shirt. He should wear these football boots. You know, he should have these socks on. I mean, and frankly, the regulator isn't good at doing that, right? The regulator is good at regulating. He's not good at innovating, frankly. So, you know, I think what the regulator needs to do is create a space that enables innovation to happen, but not try and put too many restrictions. So, you know, saying, you know, for example, defining what is a microinsurance product. I think that's, you know, foolhardy, frankly. You know, so, I mean, it's fine to kind of say things like, look, here are some principles, you know, claims should be paid quickly, you know, loss ratios should be, you know, should give good customer value. All of these things are fine, but don't try and prescribe exactly what you mean by that in a very prescriptive way. And the other characteristics of good regulatory environments is where the regulator is fairly kind of humble. So it isn't pushed around by the market, but kind of definitely wants to engage with the market. So where the regulator comes to people like us and others, you know, and says, okay, look, we're really keen. We want this. We want there to be a kind of a radical change. We want lots of people to have insurance. Can we work with you? So how do we work with you? So having prescribed what are the edges of a football field, they then come along for the journey. So they say, look, you know, will you work with us? So when you've got some crazy ideas, kind of like, tell us what they are. We'll allow you to try them out. And then, you know, and then in allowing you to try them out, we want you to keep us informed of how things go. And in doing that, the regulator kind of takes away any of the fear or concern of failure. So the best relationships we've got is where the regulator lets us try out new ideas, but then engages with us and says, okay, tell me what happens, you know, when you do this thing, tell me what happens, what works, what doesn't work, what did you learn? And we share that very openly with the regulator. And then there's that kind of trust. The regulator then trusts us. We trust the regulator because they didn't jump on us and close us down, you know. But and then you kind of start this partnership. And, you know, you look at a country like Ghana, for example, you know, 12 years, 13 years ago, we started working in that country. And a big part of the success was because the regulator and us worked together to kind of work out how to do things, right? And now, you know, I think it's one of the countries in Africa with the highest penetration of insurance. And I know that people in Nigeria don't want to hear this, but I do think you've got an awful lot you could learn from your little neighbor in Ghana, you know, in terms of how they're going about, you know, I mean, look at how many people they're reaching with insurance. You know, they're really at the forefront of this whole idea of bringing insurance to the mass market. And I think I know that people in Nigeria don't like to learn lessons from people in Ghana, but I do think in this case, there's an awful lot you could learn from them. Yeah
we are still healing from our wounds about Twitter moving there. Maybe we could use the opportunity to tell us a bit about the micro insurance company. I mean, I know you started off as micro insure, but can you tell us a bit about micro insurance company and what you are into right now, and then what the future holds?
Sure. So, I mean, we started off as micro insure because like I said at the start, like there's, you know, we could see that there was something broken. So insurance companies have been around for a long time. 97% of people don't have insurance. So the question was, what's broken and how do we fix it? So when we set up MicroInsure, that was the idea, was let's be a broker because it's much cheaper than becoming an insurance company, right? It's relatively quick to become a broker. It's relatively cheap to become a broker. So let's become a broker. Let's try and work out what's broken, what are the solutions, and then scale it up. And so I think MicroInsure is successful in doing that. You know, we reached tens of millions of people. But then a couple of years ago, we came to the point and said, okay, you know, in many ways we're successful, but actually we're not being paid enough. And we can't get paid enough because the insurance companies look at us and just say, oh, you're a broker, so here's your commission, right? Run along, be happy. But we were doing all the work, right? We were designing the insurance, we were creating the market, we were collecting the premiums, we were educating the consumer, we were handling the claims, and yet we were being paid as a broker. I mean, a broker is a guy who plays golf, right? He's not a guy who operationalizes, you know, and creates a new market, right? And so we weren't being paid properly. And so what we realized was that we had to become the insurance company, or we had to become the balance sheet, right? So we looked at how to do that. And what we decided to do was that we needed to become a reinsurance company. And so by doing that, we can become like a global digital insurance company that was paid through a reinsurance premium. Mm. And so last year, we did that. We, on the 1st of July, we transitioned from being microinsure. We're now the microinsurance company. And so the way the model works is that we're able to work kind of globally. You know, a company would come to us, so whether it's a telco or a bank or an insurance company or an insurtech coming out of like Bima Lab, you know, they would come to us and say, I want to do this, right? I've got this problem. And so we would then design them a product, and we would support that product with our own IT system. And then we would say, okay, well, we're not in, you know, whatever country. We're not in, you know, Liberia, or we're not in Senegal, or whatever the country is. And so what we would do is we would find a local insurance company who would issue the policy, and then they would just reinsure the risk to us as the microinsurance company. And that would enable us, so we don't need to then be on the ground, because what we can do is we can use our systems, we can see people signing up, we can use our system to help collect the premium. When someone's got a question about the insurance, we can give them a WhatsApp number. That's then global, right? Because then that question pops out somewhere and one of our teammates, wherever they are, whether they're in Ghana and Kenya and Pakistan, in the US, wherever they are, they can answer that question. And if they want to make a claim, they can also use WhatsApp to send in the documentation and we can administer the claim and say, yeah, this is a claim that's payable. And we tell the local insurance company to pay the claim. What do? They credit it to the mobile wallet account. And so suddenly we're a digital global insurance company who's being paid through a reinsurance premium. And this is a very, very scalable model.
Wow.
Honestly, this is actually absolutely impressive. And I'm sure that majority of our listeners will be excited to listen to this particular episode because it's been awesome all the way. I've had some, several take homes that I think can be replicated here as well. And thank you so much, Richard, for having to, come on our podcast. But before we let you go, I'd like to know for people that are listening as well, how they could reach you. Because I'm sure that a lot of people that have probably gotten adequate insights from these conversations would definitely want to reach out.
Sure. So, the easiest way is probably through LinkedIn. So I'm very active on LinkedIn. If you just search for Richard Leftley, microinsurance company, you'll find me. Send me a message there. And that's a great way to start up a conversation. Or by all means, send me an email. My email address is richard@microinsurance.com.
Awesome. It was super exciting speaking with you. Thank you. Thank you very, very much. Thank you for your time.
It's been an honor to have you on our podcast.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me. It's been fun.
Hi, Joel Rothman from Cape Town, South Africa. Thanks for supporting insurance innovation in Africa. Keep up the great work.